This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
All right. Well, it is great to be here. Thank you all for coming to this session. Can you all hear me well in the back? Or do I need to pitch it up a little more? Come through pretty good? Okay, great. So yes, as he said, we co-founded Anabaptist Perspectives a number of years ago, and this session is going to be a lot of the lessons we've learned and principles that you can take away, hopefully, that you can take away from what we've experienced. For a little bit of background, we create digital content in the forms of podcasts, videos, and essays and release them on the internet, and we're going to be talking about how can we build God's kingdom using the medium of the internet and what that looks like.
So we're going to focus primarily on new forms of media that have risen within just the past decade or two with the rise of the internet. But before we do that, and before we talk about the ways that we have found to use it to serve God's kingdom, we're going to talk about media of the past and the way that communication media has evolved.
So today we see print media as kind of old legacy media, I suppose you could call it. But at one time, its broad use was new and was subject to scrutiny. So Socrates, the Greek philosopher, lived long before the printing press, but was familiar with writing. However, he was famously illiterate and criticized books. So Plato quotes Socrates as saying, "Writing shares a strange feature with painting. The offsprings of painting stand there as if they are alive, but if anyone asks them anything, they remain most solemnly silent. The same is true of written words. You would think they were speaking as if they had some understanding, but if you question anything that has been said because you want to learn more, it continues to signify just the very same thing forever." And Socrates and others of his time were pointing out some very much cons of the written word and of books. So let's just look at a couple of those. As he says, they don't talk back to you. Books are a one-sided conversation. They can't adjust to new information. And his big point was they harm your memory. You can't remember things as well because it's written down in a book. Instead of remembering it, you just go back to the book. However, we all know there's a number of pros to those cons, and that is, they're consistent across audiences. They're broadly distributable and widely accessible to anybody who can read. So Christians should care about this. If we want to disciple someone, the best way isn't through writing to send them books to write them letters. All those things do have a place. Many have come to know Jesus through letters and correspondence. Think of the epistles of Paul. He used the medium of writing to communicate to the people he was trying to reach to. In the present, think of correspondence courses for prison ministry. There is a place for writing, but I think few, if any of us, would say that written communication is better for discipleship than face-to-face communication. Are you following me? Face-to-face communication is the one thing a book cannot replace. So, why do I say this? We've gotten used to books as a primary communication media and have more or less learned to weigh the pros and cons, deciding when written communication is most appropriate and when face-to-face conversations are necessary. As we begin to talk about new forms of media, I want us to contrast this with media that is more familiar. Let's remember that even books, we need to decide where the limits are. And remember, there's a time to put away the books and have a face-to-face conversation. It's similar with digital media. So we're aware of the abuses of new media and need to use caution and keep these things in focus when we think about them. But while doing this, we recognize that, like print, new media is an important and powerful way that can be used to reach people for the good of the gospel.
So one of the most significant landmarks in the history of print media, or books, was when Gutenberg invented the printing press, which we believe happened in about 1440. But it took quite a while for the printing press to become very widely used across Europe, which historians believe happened in about 1880, or 40 years after 1480, 40 years after the printing press was actually invented. Then we think about the reformers. The printing press was a huge, huge factor in the Protestant Reformation of 1517. Now, when Luther nailed his 95 Theses to the church door, that very important event that we remember that we think of as kicking off the Reformation, he was living about 37 years after 1480, or the time that the printing press became universally used across Europe. Now, just for the sake of comparison, it's kind of fuzzy exactly when this happened, but from what I hear, 1983 was the time that the public was actually able to connect to the internet if they chose to do so. The internet was at its very early stages at that point, but 1983 is the date associated with that. So think about where we stand in relation to that. 39 years later, roughly the same point in reference to the internet that Luther stood in relation to the printing press. The printing press allowed for the democratization of ideas and information. People who were previously relatively unknown, not famous at all, suddenly had the ability to widely distribute and spread information and ideas. No longer were teams of monks necessary to copy and spread information, working as scribes. Martin Luther made this comment after he noticed how broadly and how quickly his 95 Theses spread. He said, "It is a mystery to me how my theses were spread to so many places. They were meant exclusively for our academic circles here." Rodney Stark is a historian who was commenting on this in his book, For the Glory of God. Here's what Rodney Stark said. "Luther was probably not being entirely candid with this statement, since he knew that some of his friends had translated the theses into German and soon into French, English, and Italian, and that Europe's printers had recognized the document at once as a potential bestseller. It was only a modest exaggeration for Margaret Aston to claim that it was known throughout Germany in a fortnight and throughout Europe in a month." So the questions I ask is, would that have happened without the printing press? Would the Reformation have happened without the printing press? And of course, these aren't knowable things because history didn't happen that way. But I think that's something that we can be pretty confident of, is that the printing press, as a way of publishing and distributing messages, making them go viral, swayed the public opinion against the Roman Catholic Church and eventually led to the Protestant and the Anabaptist Reformations. Accessible media in the hands of those with a message become a powerful tool. And assuming we are sympathetic to the Reformation, most of us, I think, are in Anabaptist churches, so in some way we are, I think we would say that God used the printing press for the edification of his church. So, with that history in mind, let's talk a little bit about new media. New media is a technical term that academics used. I'm not really using it in that way. When I use new media, what we're talking about is forms of media that happened because of the internet, or forms of media that happened on the internet that were impossible before then, before that became available. So here's the kind of contrast I'm making. Look at the right column there. I have a list of examples of new media. Blogs. Blogs are very popular. Many people write their own blogs. But that didn't happen. That couldn't happen before the internet. Would the equivalent roughly be a column in a newspaper or a circle letter? There was ways people wrote and distributed what they had to say in short form, but not on blogs. Similar thing with podcasts. podcasts might roughly compare to radio as a way of using audio to distribute media. But podcasting is different in that anybody with a little bit of technical skill and a little bit of access to the internet is able to make a podcast. Same with short form video, YouTube or other forms of social media, for example. Then look at the left column. Contrast that. This is old media. Think of speech. Socrates, that we mentioned earlier, thought that speech was the best way to communicate. That was the best media. Well, think of parchment, paper, books, newspaper, billboards. None of these things depended upon digital technology or the internet, and they were very widely used before the time of the internet and still today. Some media is hybrid, or kind of a combination between new media and old media. So think of ebooks. Books have been around for thousands of years, but when you have an ebook, you've taken the same content of the book and you've distributed it on the internet through something like Kindle, for example. Similar thing with audiobooks. Taking the content of audiobooks, which is old media, recording it with audio, and distributing that way through the internet. And one last example, online news websites. Newspapers have been around for a long time. Some people have taken the news content of newspapers and putting it on the internet. So I would see that as a hybrid form of media. So we're advocating for Christians using new media here, or internet media, but this isn't because we want to neglect the old media. Old media is still tremendously influential. Something that is said on the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal or in a book by a reputable publisher is still much more influential than something that somebody has put on the blog or podcast. It has greater weight in the old media. However, new media has reached prominence and has become increasingly influential. And I'm going to give an illustration here, only as an illustration, not for life advice, not because we want to copy them. This is just to illustrate a point. The most widely listened to podcast today was made by an individual, mostly by himself with no organizational backing. But today he has an audience that is 3 times greater than the largest cable news show. So I'm not encouraging us to try to rise ourselves to prominence in the entertainment industry or to gain fame. That would have very limited value, probably be very counterproductive. But here's the point. New media offers everybody, individuals, churches, ministries, ways to reach people in ways that haven't ever before been seen. And there's ways in which our standing today has similarity to that of the Reformers. We have new communication resources at our fingertips. And so I ask, how will we use this to serve God's kingdom? Next slide. Just a few characteristics of new media before we move on. New media differs from old media in several ways. Perhaps the biggest one is that anybody can produce it. Old media had gatekeepers. So think of the publishers or the editors. If you wanted to write and publish a book, you would have to go through publishers. It would be heavily, heavily scrutinized by editors. And if the market was inhospitable to you as a writer, nobody would buy your book, and you could be pushed out of the market. So it provided some accountability structures there. With new media, none of that is necessarily in place. Of course, there are publishers and companies that give their new media, podcast or whatever, similar level of scrutiny of what they would give a book, but that doesn't have to be the case. Many individuals have on a pedestal and said things, gained an audience without any of the old traditional accountability structures of publishers and editors. Another characteristic is the broad reach. There's very minimal geographical locations. If you're producing media in English, anybody around the world almost anybody around the world with internet access will be able to access it and become part of your audience.
So to take all this and boil it down is to get a bit of a look into Jaron and I's brains a number of years ago when we were on a road trip, which you can see, we did an episode, and it's up on Antibiotics Perspective's website, where saying, what if we would try this? Like, I don't know. I don't know of anybody who's done anything like this. Well, let's get some cameras and some microphones and start recording things, and let's just put it on the internet. And so we did. In early 2017, we released the first episode and just said, okay, let's just see what happens. You know, it didn't really have much expectation for it. Literally within days of it being launched, and this is without publicity at all, we had over 1,000 people had watched or listened to that video and podcast. And we're like, okay, I didn't expect that. And within a few short weeks, we had well over 1,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. And now today, that number has risen to over 4,800 people on YouTube, and the numbers keep climbing. We expect several thousand people every week, every time we release something. And again, keep in mind, we did this with basically no PR. We didn't have any kind of infrastructure in place, which maybe wasn't all good necessarily, but the point being, we just put it out there. And the fact that so many people started watching was a sign that there are people out there that are looking for this kind of material. They want to know these things, and they're searching. So here's what's really interesting. This isn't flashy entertainment we're talking about here, if you've watched our episodes. It's conversations about God's work and about God's people and what it means to live in a community and do church together. And there's an audience out there that is actively looking for that kind of content. We have regularly, from over a dozen countries in the world, people will listen to what we post. As a bit of an example, as an example, this is the audience. This is some of the feedback. I mean, we get lots of feedback, but this is one comment that came through on the first episode we did with John D. Martin a few years ago. And this fellow says, you just made me feel so much better for feeling the way I have since I grew up in an extremely politically involved environment. I've been on a long, hard road trying not to feel so alone in my beliefs. This white-haired man, I like that, referring to John D., here has just eased my mind and given me the courage to lovingly move forward in my path of radically loving God's creation until the day I die.
Another thing that we have learned is that the world is our audience. Most of our audience is in North America, but we regularly hear from, maybe I shouldn't say regularly, we have often heard from people in places like the Philippines, Australia, Brazil, Japan, the United Kingdom, and Germany. These are usually people with little or no other exposure to Anabaptist people, but they are interested in a life of devoted discipleship. And sometimes they've even inquired about joining Anabaptist churches. And for most of these people, that isn't an option for them. There are not Anabaptist churches anywhere near where they live. So we encourage them to live faithfully in the place where God has put them. And here's an example of a comment that somebody left from the Philippines. How about the Philippines? We need a church here. Please. There's lots of exclamation points there. I work hard to help it start if you send someone, and my wife and our children will be faithful members and workers. We don't just have a desire. My children need a church family, and there are zero Mennonites or Anabaptists here.
Mm-hmm. And that comment really represents some of the limitations. So we've just went through, there is an audience, clearly. There's people looking for this. The world is our audience. But now let's look at the limitations, because there really are severe limitations to this. And some of them are pretty obvious. We are confronted with the limitations of what we can offer simply because people come to us with big questions about things like finding a church, educating their children, and what to do when it's illegal not to vote in their country. That's been an interesting challenge. We put ourselves out there as ones who can facilitate one way of encouraging faithful living, but many people we hear from need life-on-life discipleship. That is a lot more than a podcast could ever offer. So as an example, Jaron has emailed and talked on the phone extensively with one person in particular, and this person you know, really fell in love with the Anabaptist commitment to Christian education rather than public education, non-resistance, and modesty. But he lives in Germany and will soon face the decision to send his young children to public school. How do you help a man like this? What do we say? He needs community of like-minded brothers and sisters to help him navigate this decision. This is much more than we can do through internet media.
So why new media? Or what is the vision with this? There's a couple things. One of which is that we seek to, in some ways, reach people where they are at. If you sit at a restaurant, you stand in line at the DMV, you're at a gate at the airport, you'll see where people are at. They're in their phones. Smartphones have made the internet very widely available, but it's also one of the quickest and most successful ways to reach those around us. The internet is used for entertainment, for boring work things, also bad and perverse things. But people also go to it with their questions, looking for answers. So, will we make good answers available to them?
And as we've been saying, person-to-person relationships simply can't be replaced by an information broadcast. So our vision doesn't end with making good answers available and glorifying God through new media. Our vision is to make disciples. We aim to direct people towards fellowship with others who will point them towards discipleship and mentoring among God's people in person. For some, new media has been the first point of connection before moving towards real discipleship. And that is what has made this so fulfilling, is people reaching out to us and saying, is there a church where I can fellowship other people like this? And we're able to connect them with a church in their area and help them find people like them.
And discipleship is best done in the context of a local church. Jesus came to earth to start a church, not a podcast, not a publishing company, and not a mission organization. So if our podcasts, our publishing companies, our mission organizations don't share Jesus' aim of building up his church, I wonder if these organizations are sharing Jesus' goals. We contend that new media is a viable option for building up the church. We recently spoke with one of our friends, Kevin Breckville. He's a pastor from Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, who is actually on the episode that we published today on the Anabaptist Perspectives podcast. He spoke to us about his church and the ways that they found to use new media effectively. He spoke of people within his own town who didn't know his church existed until discovering it on YouTube. And the church is very effective at outreach, from what I can see. The building is visible. It's in town. They have various ministries to and discipleship programs, very active at reaching out. But some people won't be found without extraordinary measures like new media. So can new media be used to encourage people toward the local church? We believe that it can. So we with Anabaptist Perspectives have found one way to use new media. But there's definitely space for more. It's not a saturated market at all. So we're going to talk some now about the opportunities that we see. One is book publishing. Mennonites have been doing that for years, been doing it well. We really want that to continue. That's perhaps one of the most obvious things. That's something we're already doing. But what about... We got audiobooks here?
Yeah.
Okay. What about audiobooks? What if the content that we are already making would become more accessible and broadly available through audiobook platforms? I have a chart here, which is market research from 2020 by Grandview Research, which they were studying the market for audiobooks. They concluded that the market had a compound annual growth rate of 24.4%. The market size in 2020 was $3.3 billion United States dollar, and they're projecting and this is just an educated guess, but I think it's a reasonable one, that in 2027, the market size would be $15 billion United States dollars, or roughly growth of 5 times bigger. So if the study is accurately guessing, we may still be in the early stages of this market's growth. How will we respond? Many people in our circles have written books. We have various publishing companies, some of which are here at Reach today, and they've been doing very good work. That needs to continue. But audiobooks don't generate any new content. It can be based upon what we're already doing. The content remains the same, but the medium is different. Audiobooks give existing materials broader and more streamlined reach that distributes content on mainstream platforms. This is exciting because it gives anybody the opportunity to put the message of the gospel on the same platforms where there are New York Times bestsellers. This is an option that is available to us, and we would love to see this potential maximized. As kind of a proof of concept, last year we produced and released an audiobook edition of David Brousseau's book, In God We Don't Trust. It's a good book. Y'all should read it. But now it can be found on all major audiobook platforms, such as Audible, Apple Books. For many people, reading is not a common habit. However, these same people who don't read much are often open to listening to things like podcasts or audiobooks. Producing audiobooks provides the same material in a medium that makes it more accessible to many who would never read the physical book. While we are still exploring the option of audiobooks, we think that there is a massive opportunity for Anabaptists to produce audio editions of books and release them in a way that is available to anybody with internet access or smartphone.
So another one, and this is what we've focused in on, is podcasting, which, let's break this chart down just a bit, but if you look at the numbers for each year, the amount of people per year, so this is in the numbers of millions, so hundreds of millions of people listening to podcasts, and then it's projecting where it's going to go in the future. The numbers are enormous. And not only are more people listening to podcasts than ever, and the number continues to grow, there's a lot more people podcasting than ever before because the bar of entry is fairly low. It's reasonably simple to start a podcast. And that has been one approach that we have found to enter this field by releasing our stuff both as video and in podcast form. And we've been really encouraged to see others in the Anabaptist world starting to do this as well. And we encourage that. It's been really nice to see that. However, I would make the point, with these kinds of numbers, the market is not saturated. There's enormous amounts of room for more material like this out there. It's interesting. A trend we've seen is the people that tend to get into producing podcasts and things within the Anabaptist world do tend to be younger. And while that's really good, I would love to see more older people, people that have lived more years and have some wisdom to share with us, to get in on this and share that wisdom with the next generation in a way that is meaningful and gets it out to a lot of people. Anyone with a smartphone will be able to access it. If trends teach us anything encouraging, podcasting does not demand a high bar of entry. It doesn't require flashy aesthetics, and podcast listeners have long attention spans, contrary to what some people might think. 2-hour episodes are totally normal, as long as a sermon, or even longer, is not unusual. So, where does this leave us as we try to circle it all back around? Well, a couple of practical things that I would encourage you look into. There are other people in this space. We're certainly not the only ones. So if you don't mind, Brian Martin right here helps lead out in Strength to Strength, which is a great podcast. They've done some really good work, and we've appreciated what they've done. There's other people, Sound Faith, which is run by Daniel Willis up in Chambersburg, Kevin Breck, Bill's Church, that we just mentioned, produces stuff on YouTube and has reached a tremendous amount of people. There's another one, The Campfire, which is available through email for people who may not do like YouTube access. It's another way you can access material like this. And that's just an example. There's many others. And we really encourage that. It's a blessing to see people getting into this space and reaching out to people who may not get this material any other way. So, to summarize our case, or our position, or whatever you would like to call it, we believe that new media is an important way of communicating the gospel of the kingdom. Too often, broadly accessible media has fallen into triviality and entertainment. Let's focus on the substance and depth of the gospel's call while leveraging the opportunities to service Christ and his church. There are many ways to reach the world with the message of God's kingdom. In this presentation, we've outlined what we've seen, and hopefully these are principles you can apply in your own life and church. Regardless of the tools that are used, we're passionate about finding creative solutions to spread the message of the gospel to as many people as we can in a way that brings about meaningful discipleship and meaningful, deep church community. So to summarize, what resources are you going to use to reach out to the world around you? So I think that is where we're going to conclude. We're maybe a little ahead of schedule, and that's good because we wanted to leave some time open for Q&A and see what questions you might have about what we've shared or our work in general or anything else. So, yes, are there any questions or clarifications that someone would like to make? Yes.
Is anybody doing anything, or you or anybody else doing anything with short video, TikTok, 1 or 2 minute stuff on YouTube? It seems like people I talk to, that's their first entry into a topic, is short video, and then they do the long video.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So TikTok, Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, the whole gamut are designed to be 60 seconds or less short videos that you can watch on your phone. I have definitely thought about it. The attention grab there is incredible. You can post something to Instagram Reels and you'll often get thousands of views like that. It's almost weird. The problem is, we're talking about rich, meaningful church community. How deep and rich can you go in 60 or seconds or less? It's hard enough in a 15-minute episode. So at this point, we haven't done it. I would really like to see someone experiment and see what the results are on that.
It has to be a lead into something longer.
Yes. So that's another good point. So with what we're doing, sure, we're on YouTube, but the ultimate goal is push them over to our website where they can find the whole library of content, get, you know, reach out, get connected, find a church. You know, that's the goal. We don't want them sitting on YouTube all day. That's not good. Don't do that. if that makes sense. So I see what you're saying. It could be part of a funnel. Someone should look into doing it. Yeah. Yes.
Any direction where you can get some help on developing it? We just started one, but it's pretty rough.
You're saying a podcast or Jaren?
Resources you're asking about? I'm not aware of any. Trial and error. I think that was our approach.
That is totally what we did.
Yeah. I'm not aware of any resources to recommend. I'm sure there are some, but not that I have off the top of my head.
Yeah, we definitely just tried stuff. Like, remember, I put it up on my personal YouTube channel, like, the moment we clicked upload on the very first episode, and you can tell we had totally no idea what we were doing. We're just like, well, let's see, what title should it be, and, like, what should it look like, and should we write something with this, or maybe, you know, like, we had no idea, and a lot of it is just doing it over and over and over and over until you get it good. However, you can save yourself a lot of grief by going on something like Skillshare.com. They have tons of classes on any kind of digital content creation you would ever want. That's very helpful. Yeah. Yes?
Do you get many requests asking, is there a church like this in my country, or state, or whatever? Mm-hmm. One reason I ask, you used the illustration of the Philippines man. Well, I know that there are Anabaptist churches there. So when you get comments, then you should be able to say yes.
We often try to do that. I'm the one who manages the communication, so I hear from these kind of people pretty often. Like, I mentioned the one in the Philippines, and my go-to starting place is Pilgrim Ministries Church Finder website. They have a lot of churches listed there. There's other directories I also consult with, and sometimes I check with individuals. For this individual, I think it was an 11-hour drive to the nearest church with, like, a ferry on another island. So, yeah, I know there are several Anabaptist churches in the Philippines, but still room for more. Still pretty sparse.
The Philippines is a big place.
Yes.
Is the same with England? Like, we've had a number, what was it, from London, I'm going to say, that was like, are there any Mennonite churches in London? Well, no, not that we've been able to find. If anybody knows one, please let us know, because we have a decent amount of people from the UK that watch and said, where do we go to find more? You know, well, there's not a whole lot of options there, you know. Yes?
Just got a question. What's the role of the local body church, if they have a YouTube channel, to push into some of these things, et cetera? How might that look?
Could you give me maybe a little more detail on what you're looking for there?
Should we, like, I guess, okay, so our church has a live stream usually, and I guess my question is, a lot of people do a live stream, but then should we do like a full recording of the video, edit it, and then put it up, because it's going to be higher quality?
Yeah, I would say if you want people to watch, it has to look nice and it has to sound nice. So yeah, you may need to invest, you know, in some good equipment. So again, I'll refer back to Sound Faith YouTube channel. Just go on there and you'll get a really good example of a church who said, okay, we're going to spend a few thousand dollars, or maybe more than a few thousand dollars, and do this right because this is important and this is ministry. And they did, and they have a guy there, well, Danny Willis, and we've interviewed him a few times, that puts a lot of time in it. And all it is their sermons. Basically, they do other content, but it's basically sermons that are parody, edits them nice, makes them look really nice, and they get thousands of views all over the world. You know, whereas if they would just do a really simple live stream that doesn't look very good and the audio is kind of bad, I'm guessing a lot of people won't watch it. So it is work. Like, we don't want this to sound too easy. This is work. Bar of entry is really low, but to do this consistently is, yeah. Anyway. Yes?
Have you ever considered doing a workshop where people that are interested in getting into it, you would do a workshop and people could come and come on a workshop, you help them get them online?
You know, that has never crossed my mind. Have you ever thought of that?
No.
That's a great idea. Honestly, that's an amazing idea. That's never crossed my mind. We could get, like me and Brian and Daniel Willis over at Sound Faith and, like, sit down and, like... Because a lot of it is just technical stuff. And once you figure it out and kind of, like, you can get very, very detailed, almost too detailed sometimes. But if you don't have someone to show you, it is a little bit daunting. And like I said, you know, like we said before, we were just trying stuff, like, initially. It's just, like, trying to figure stuff out. So.
And the reason I come up with that is because, I mean, there's people like me who, I mean, we're techie enough to get into it, but we just get really sick of it because we do something wrong, and it looks bad, and our kids laugh at us. Yeah, just stay off there.
Yeah,
you know, but... You were saying that there's a lot of this ancient wisdom, old wisdom, that needs to get up onto the internet and produce that, whereas sometimes we see the younger people, they're on there, but sometimes their content is not as rich as it could be.
Yeah.
So there's people like, you know, there's people like my age that would have interest in getting some of those older people on, but we either don't take the time, we're just tired of fooling because we're just sick of it.
Yeah. That's such a great point. I mean, I would say about the greatest honor I've ever had is meeting David Brousseau, sitting down with him, and just asking him all the questions that I have. You know, my job is amazing. Like, I'm not the one giving all the answers. I can sit down with someone who has all this life experience. All I do is get to ask them questions, and it's amazing. And we need more of that. We have some incredible pastors and church leaders with this life experience. And if there's a way to put it out as a podcast, young people will listen. We do podcasts. If you're a millennial or younger, you do podcasts. I'm pretty sure. It's huge. You know, on your way to work and you want something to listen to. Well, what are they going to listen to? Because everybody listens to something, right? So it's going to be Spotify or music or some other silly podcast that, you know, it's not that great or whatever. No, let's enrich their lives. You know, on their way to work or whatever. I'm right with you. We need to do it. We need more of this. This is a call to young people too that have the tech skills. Get out there. Start helping. You know, people like you who want to do it. Find a techie person in your church to help you figure it out and work the bugs out and go for it. And I really mean that. There is so much potential.
So again, put the bug in for the workshop.
Okay. I really like that idea. Well, if anybody was to sign up, yeah, talk to him. Yeah, good question. Yes?
So
So while the bar of entry is low, let's say you create a website, getting visibility on Google is hard.
Mm-hmm.
How do you recommend going about establishing that viewership? Or do you recommend, you recommend 50 little candles here. Do you see an ability to network some of that, creating those links?
Mm-hmm. Man, that's a really good question. You have a thought on that?
It's not something I thought about a great deal.
No. Yeah,
it's a good question. Mm-hmm.
Yes,
you're doing that in ways. So when I think of YouTube, mm-hmm. you go to channels there on your YouTube channel, or is it? There's a couple of slots over on the channel, yeah. where you partner or network with other ministries,
yeah.
and so on there you have like I think you have Strength to Strength, mm-hmm. Scroll Publishing, some of those. What you're doing, you're actually networking with other like-minded YouTube channels, if you will. So I'm speaking just YouTube right now.
Yeah,
which I think is
yeah.
really important is creating that network. If I go to a YouTube channel. Now, who are these guys? One of the first things I do is look at mm-hmm. who are they networking with? And that mm-hmm. kind of gives an idea of their ecosystem.
Yeah.
Are these guys worth listening to or not? Mm-hmm. And I think with churches and stuff like that, you see it oftentimes they're not networking with, let's say, other churches within their affiliation or yeah. other like-minded YouTube channels. So if you can create that, mm-hmm. that really helps can grow your network and help other networks as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. So we can take what Bryant is doing with Strength to Strength, and then I go and interview you and put it on, and now Bryant is tagged in the title of mine, and so someone watches a Strength to Strength, and then, oh, hey, Ambassador Perspective pops up, and the other way around, too. They'll watch Ambassador Perspectives, and your stuff will pop up. Or it's the same with Sound Faith. We interviewed some people with Sound Faith, you know, and now when someone's watching Sound Faith, they'll find our stuff. Like, make it network together nicely. That'll really help people find what you're trying to do. And this is, again, there's so much to do out here. There's so many people that are looking for this stuff. The world is a really needy place, you know, and we don't have it all figured out, but Jesus does. So let's start talking about it. It's kind of the idea. At the same time, we need to be careful because the internet has a lot of dark sides and a lot of bad things involved as well. I want to be careful that we're not up here saying, yay, the internet is the solution. It's not. The church and Jesus is the solution. All we're doing here is trying to say, hey, maybe we can use this internet thing to make discipleship that much more doable or networked or whatever word you want to use for it. That's what we're trying to say. And I hope that's coming through, that we're not saying the internet is like the solution. It is not. To be clear, it's a powerful tool in your toolbox. Use the tool well, but don't think it's the whole project. It's not. Am I making sense? We're running kind of low on time. Jaron, did you want to add anything, or is there another question?
No, nothing more there, but thank you, Brian. That's a good point.
It is a really great point. I think we probably do have time for one more, if anybody has it. Yes?
How far do you get to reach out to subscribers that want something more than the podcast?
Great question. That'd be you.
How far? Can you repeat it?
Like, so for example, there's a guy who wants more than just the podcast. He's asking for churches in his area or something. How far do you get to reach out to him?
It depends. Sometimes it depends how far they pursue it and want to. I'll often email, correspond with people. I'll often talk on the phone with them. But I try to get them connected with people in their area. Like we talked about, there's limits to what we're able to do through a podcast and the amount of energy that we can put into that kind of thing remotely. So we try, but it's mostly through correspondence and trying to connect them with people near them.
Yeah. Yeah, good question. Okay, well, he hasn't holed up the end signed yet, so I don't know. Maybe one more question real speedy quick, if anybody has it.
Have you ever dealt with any trolls or attackers?
Yes. You want to talk about that?
Yeah. I mean, we do. There's been several people through our history who just leave a tremendous quantity of comments across a tremendous quantity of videos. Some of them loving, some of them very hateful. So, that's a thing. I try to think of it, if they keep coming back and back and back, leaving more negative comments, they're drawn to it somehow. So It's hard to take the hate too seriously because they keep coming back.
So would you delete them? Would you delete comments?
I do sometimes. Yeah, if they're specifically attacking our guest, for example, in a just cruel way or slander, there are limits. I tend to be pretty lenient, but I do delete comments occasionally. Yes.
Wow. Well, very good. Thank you all for your time and attention, and we will turn it back over to the moderator.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.